Hello, you are listening to Wellness Unfiltered Pro. The information provided in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for independent clinical judgment or personalized patient care. The content is not designed to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, nor is it intended to direct patient management decisions.
Welcome to Wellness Unfiltered Pro Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Arland Hill, Director of Clinical Education for Biotics Research. Before I introduce our topic and professional panel today, I'd like to acknowledge our sponsor, Biotics Research. Family-owned and operated for 50 years, Biotics Research continues to revolutionize the nutritional supplement industry by utilizing the best of science and nature to create high-quality nutritional supplements. With a continued focus on innovation and the use of unique and clinically proven delivery systems such as emulsified nutrients, vegetable culture tableting base, and plant matrix minerals, Biotics Research continues to be a pioneer in the professional nutritional supplement industry. Over the past two decades, vitamin D has seen an unparalleled evolution in understanding, appreciation, and application. A nutrient that was limited to a couple of hundred IUs of replacement to now dosed at several thousand IUs and being used in mega bolus dosages with success, a lot of change has circulated around vitamin D. And about those changes, the most recent is the change in labeling, using micrograms as compared to IUs, although most labels often retain both. And to this nutrient, the endogenous production should be initiated with sunlight exposure, a fact we all tend to know and relish in. Yet, even in southern latitudes, individuals still do not meet their needs, much less in northern latitudes. So here's the point. The nutrient once looked at predominantly for bone health has become a foundational nutrient in most practices. There's a recognition that even with sunlight exposure, many still remain deficient. With connections to cardiovascular, musculoskeletal, immune health, vitamin D is a nutrient with utility across multiple categories. However, with such a diverse range of patients in which to apply vitamin D, it only makes sense that we would have unique dosing solutions for each patient class. This is the focus of today's conversation. We're going to take you through the different dosing regimens, give guidelines for selecting the most appropriate administration options, and look at which nutrients synergistically pair with vitamin D to yield the best outcomes. But before we begin, allow me to formally introduce my colleague joining me for this conversation, Daniel Benning. Daniel is an experienced practitioner and functional medicine consultant that has been with Biotics Research for almost 30 years, covering Arizona and New Mexico. He is the host of Daniel's Downloads, a monthly educational webinar that brings the latest nutritional updates to professionals. Let's begin our discussion today with a look at the technology behind Biotics Research vitamin D products. This is a key differentiator for the Biotics Research line, mostly, but not exclusively among the fat-soluble nutrients. No doubt many practitioners are familiar with the term emulsion and emulsification, but what do those terms actually mean in practicality? And more importantly, are all emulsions created equal? In short, no, they are not. But to better understand this conversation, let's recap the fat-soluble nutrient physiology. And I want to begin with just specifically taking a look at vitamin D. And just as a reminder, vitamin D, when we talk specifically about this, we're looking at vitamin D3. We're looking at cholecalciferol. This is as opposed to vitamin D2 or ergocalciferol. Throughout this conversation, we're going to be focusing on D3. This is a fat-soluble nutrient. That's probably one of the most well-known facts about this. But what does that mean? Well, understand that because of that fat-soluble nature, it's also going to be hydrophobic, water-fearing. So it's going to lack the direct dissolution in an aqueous intestinal environment. The intestinal environment is a water-based environment, and all of us have seen the pouring oil and water and how those separate. And so literally what we're talking about here is that you've got a fat-soluble nutrient entering into a water-soluble environment. And so clearly there's going to be some repel between those two substances. Now, when you look at vitamin D, going back to that, vitamin D is structurally similar to cholesterol. And that's an important point about this. And if we think about the dynamics through the small intestine of what has to happen to ultimately allow for the uptake of vitamin D, let me walk you through this process. Remember, when you take in dietary fats, that's going to stimulate the release of bile. Bile, one of its primary roles is that it's going to emulsify fats, meaning that it's going to take a larger fat globule and it's going to break it down into smaller globules. Once that happens, that gives those globules are now more accessible to pancreatic lipase. So meaning that pancreatic lipase can have a better impact on those smaller globules as opposed to having just trying to work on that large globule. What this ultimately does is that pancreatic lipase is going to break down the triglycerides. And so from that, you end up with fatty acids, you end up with monoglycerides in there. And ultimately, these are going to form a what's called a missile. And missiles are going to be a combination of bile acids. You get the fatty acids and monoglycerides in here that I just mentioned. You do get the cholesterol component. And of course, relative to our conversation today, you're going to get the fat-soluble nutrients. Once that missile is formed, it's carried to the brush border. And at that brush border, it's going to diffuse into the epithelial cell, so the lining of the GI tract. There, it gets incorporated into chylomicrons. Now, here's a key point to acknowledge on this. Chylomicrons are too large to enter into intestinal capillaries. If it can't enter into a capillary, then that raises the question of where does it go from there? And the answer to that is that it enters into the lymphatic system instead. And once it enters into the lymphatic system, that allows it to ultimately travel to the thoracic duct, and then it drains into systemic circulation. So that is the ideal pathway by which vitamin D is taken in and ultimately moved into lymphatic circulation to be, from there, moved throughout the body. Now, one of the reasons that this is important is that this is going to bypass what is called first-pass hepatic metabolism. Many would probably think about this in an analogous way for pharmaceuticals, meaning that many pharmaceutical delivery methods work to bypass that first-pass metabolism of the liver so that they can remain more active for a longer duration. And that's essentially what ends up happening here is that you're able to bypass that first breakdown process through the liver. Now, let me just touch on one thing before we jump over to emulsions specifically. And I just have to acknowledge, what are some of the inhibitors of absorption? So fat malabsorption, for any of you that are doing stool tests, certainly working with patients with gastrointestinal dysfunction, you'll recognize that many of the inflammatory states, many of the clinical situations that we look at are going to impact fat and lead to fat malabsorption. That can also be a product of bile insufficiency. And right on the heels of that, of course, you have to talk about the pancreas because they're both involved in fat digestion. Lymphatic congestion, right? So that's going to lead to a circulation problem. Low fat diets, of course, impacting uptake. And then any type of structural or functional deficit as it relates specifically to the enterocyte. So those could all be factors.
You know, Dr. Hill, I appreciate this review. Actually, I'm taking notes over here. That's why it's so quiet over here for refresh me. But I just want to touch base on, you know, what we've seen in this industry for so long at Biotics Research is the gallbladder insufficiency problem. And that, you know, that digestion north to south component and how all the cascade of hormones interact. But seeing the bile insufficiency is a real deal that we need to look at and address. I mean, that's why we developed beta TCP to help thin the bile, which helps emulsify the fats and move things. Some will say this is why we have such fatty soluble deficiencies, is from gallbladder insufficiency at some levels. So I just want to touch base on that as we went over this great review, is for the practitioners listening in, look at bile insufficiency as a real deal. And for these, even for these vitamin D deficiency cases.
Well, and you know, to that point, Daniel, there's a reason that products like Beta Plus, Beta TCP, that those are longstanding top sellers for biotics. They support a portion of the patient population out there that really needs that support, but for the most part in general, doesn't get that support. So well stated. You know, looking at that physiology, and with that physiology on the table now and understanding that, it now we can have the conversation about emulsions and what actually emulsion technology is and how it becomes a differentiator. So let's talk about the benefits behind emulsions, first of all, here. So emulsions are micronized. And by micronizing, that means that you're ultimately able to suspend a fat-soluble substance in water. So again, if you just go back to that visual image, that mental image, if you will, of water and oils trying to combine, they ultimately separate. When you micronize that, it changes the nature. And I'll share with you the reasons on that in a moment. Just think in terms of smaller droplets. That's ultimately what we're trying to get to, because the smaller those droplets are, the larger surface area coverage that we're going to have. That also means that there's going to be less dependence on bile to break down large oil globules. And again, to the point here is that so many individuals have problems breaking down their fats because of the insufficiencies in the liver and the gallbladder, and this ultimately becomes a way to be less dependent on the bile. So for those individuals that are looking to try to do restorative interventions for liver and gallbladder, but you're also, as the practitioner, thinking about, well, how do I get these nutrients into these patients because they're clearly deficient, and do it efficiently while I'm taking them through that restorative process, the emulsions are really the answer to that question. Right. They're just the most efficient delivery method in those scenarios. Ultimately, it's going to improve the dispersion throughout the intestinal fluid. The intestinal fluid, again, being a more water-soluble environment. And it makes micelle incorporation more efficient and faster. So when you have optimal bile, that is still obviously the most desirable way to create the most functional micelles. But again, we're talking about, well, how do we work around some of these limitations that patients present with sometimes, right? And this is one of the ways to do that. Emulsions increase the likelihood that vitamin D will be efficiently incorporated into the bile salt mediated mixed micelles, because again, it's smaller. It can ultimately, as that micelle is forming with all those different components to it, it's going to mix itself in more efficiently, and that improves the delivery into the enterocytes. Now, one of the things, if you've been around the nutritional space for any time, you've probably seen emulsion get used in different ways out there. And that ultimately raises the question of, well, what creates a true emulsion? What is it that actually allows someone to say, we have a true emulsion? And it's not one single thing. In fact, I don't intend for where I'm getting ready to go with this conversation to be very chemistry or physics oriented, but I do think it's relevant for me to share some of these terms so you as a practitioner can have an appreciation for actually what has to go into the thought process of how you not only make, but how do you stabilize over time a true emulsion. So when you get into this conversation, you start to talk about things like interfacial tension, surfactant stabilization, kinetic stability, thermodynamic stability, right? Those are all terms that, when I just mentioned them, you probably go, oh my gosh, I probably haven't heard many of those terms since the chemistry days of going through college. And that's probably true for most of us, right? But these are the things that have to be on the table when you talk about building a true emulsion. Now, by definition, an emulsion is a dispersion of one immiscible liquid into another. So to say that a little differently, it's oil into water for vitamin D, right? That's essentially what we're talking about here. So we know that oil and water, I've been giving you this mental image, those are going to naturally separate. And that is an indication that they are thermodynamically unstable. And the only way when you enter these oils into a liquid, the only way that they're going to remain dispersed apart is if the droplets are small enough, yep. If the surfactants actually reduce what I introduced to you earlier, the interfacial tension, and if the electrical or steric repulsion prevents coalescence. And the coalescence is, if you think about all these little small droplets, that's actually all these little small droplets coming back together is what that is. So it's just, it's coalescing back together. So this is far more if you've heard, oh, you just have to have an optimal surface tension. Well, I think what I've shared with you so far pretty well illustrates the point that if you're only thinking in the dimension of surface tension, that's only a fraction of this entire conversation. It's much more elegant than just surface tension here. If the emulsion fails, that's where the droplets merge back together. That's where you start to see these large droplets begin to form. And once that happens, now you've got a substance that is no longer easily incorporated back into those micelles, right? And then everything else from there becomes more challenging. So what makes biotics different in this conversation? Well, let me go through some of the specifics here relative to what I've introduced to you already. So one is that biotics products are going to be at 5 nanometer droplet size. And that is where you hit the sweet spot of thermodynamically and kinetically being stable. So this is not what we're talking about with a nanoemulsion. This is actually below a nanoemulsion. And nanoemulsions are where most emulsions in the marketplace live at. We're talking about a microemulsion even down beyond that, okay? And this is where when you look at fats in food, so if you'll think about nuts, for example, we know nuts are going to be a good dietary source of fat. When you look at the fat globules in nuts, they mimic a size of around 5 nanometers. So this is mimicking what you see in food inherently. The second thing here is the use of GABA or of gum arabica. So gum arabica is what we would consider to be a very safe surfactant. Mm-hmm. Okay. This is also the reason that when you're looking at the liquid options that we're going to talk about, whether you're looking at the capsule options, you'll see gum arabica in here. And this is the reason that it's in these products is because it is the surfactant that we're using and it's a very safe surfactant. Very low toxicity profile, very, very well tolerated, widely, widely used, has a long track record. And so it's one that we can safely lean on here. And here may be the most important point in this conversation is that these emulsions are validated until the expiration date. That means that when you look at that product at the time of manufacturing and those globules being the size that they are and staying that size, we can confirm for you that they're going to be the exact same size up until that expiration date. Now, you may ask, how do we confirm that? The answer to this is that these products have stability studies done on them before they ever enter back or before they ever enter into the marketplace. So that homework behind the scenes has already been done. It's not theoretical. It's actually been carried out in the laboratory. And when that's the case, you don't have that coalescence, right? That's a small droplets coming back together. You don't have the coalescence and you get the actual delivery of the product that you think you're supposed to be getting. Now, this story could end here, to be honest with you, as these advantages and everything I've shared with you, we don't typically talk on this level of detail about these products, but this is the thought process behind these products, and it's extremely clinically significant. Yet, remember, I said we acknowledge that there is a need for dosing and administration choices that are going to best fit each patient. And that's where Daniel and I are going to take you now. And I'm going to hand this back over to Daniel to start moving us into some of the product specifically.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Hill. I wanted to touch base back on, because I'm looking at a slide actually on my desk here. because in my long tenure with biotics research and seeing the applications of the products we're going to talk about, the microemulsion really stands out. And I really want our listeners to visualize it almost to show them the importance. And I always give the analogy as I'm looking at this slide that not all emulsions are created equal. And I give a very simplified analogy of just taking olive oil and vitamin D and shaking it up in a bottle. Could that be an emulsion? I suppose. But when you look at it, as I'm looking at it on a microscopic slide, you have large particle, small particle, all these different size particles versus what you're talking about the 5 nanometer particle size. On the slide I'm looking at from the Biotics Research vitamin D, you have consistent particle size across the slide. And it's these small particles, like you said, this surface area for this absorption. And that's why these vitamin Ds we're going to talk about are such a big seller, because we get clinical results. You will shift numbers very effectively. So again, we have to remember, as we're talking about this, not all emulsions are created equal. It's not to badmouth anybody here. It's just trying to tell you the reality of the science that we put into our products.
Yeah, that just for our listeners, Daniel, that image that you're referring to is on the product, the emulsion product tech sheet, if you will. And yeah. I would highly, highly recommend that everyone listening to this grab a copy of that, because this image, you know, we've all heard the saying that a picture can say 1,000 words. That illustration just really sums up this entire conversation that we're having today.
Yeah, agreed, agreed. So let's dive into one of our products, our BioDK caps. And this has been in the line a while. And we'll talk about what people are maybe more familiar with, our biodemulsion later. But as you were mentioning earlier in the presentation, what's listed on the label is the 125 micrograms. Well, what's that relationship to IUs? It's 5,000 IUs of vitamin D3 per capsule. Now, we did add vitamin K1 and K2, and I know, Dr. Hill, you're going to talk about that a little bit more. But applications for this product, first off, when you look at this, this is an emulsion, but in a dry capsule. So we have to go beyond thinking of just our liquid bottles, which were our signature from, you know, as long as I've been with biotics research, and looking at how you can create an emulsion, as you mentioned earlier, but putting it also into a dry. So this is a microemulsified vitamin D and K for, again, that greater absorption rate. But when you look at the label, you also have, in this case, our baseline of SOD and catalase, which, not to get into detail, we've talked about this before, but is a very potent antioxidant for this product, for stabilization even, but for benefits just in general for the patient. So you're looking at one capsule of 5,000 IUs of vitamin D with, you know, 550 micrograms of K1 to K2 combination in a 10-to-1 ratio. I always like to give some what I call practical applications of where, as a refresher, I know we know a lot about how to utilize vitamin D, but as a refresher of where to apply it. And there's this wonderful chart we've had. And again, talk about, for those listening in, look at the emulsification literature. But there was a chart that your representative would have that was, it's called the biochemical processes of inflammation and pain. And it was done by Dr. Alex Vasquez. You know, I got to give credit there. He's been a dear mentor of mine for many years. And if you look at his chart pathway about how vitamin D comes in and inhibits NF-kappa B, your inflammatory enzyme. So think of vitamin D for your pain pathway patients. And then you'll see, like, vitamin D has been mentioned by Dr. Mark Houston for a long time, the cardiologist out of Vanderbilt. Here's a PubMed study. Vitamin D, a negative endocrine regulator of the renin-angiotensin system and blood pressure. I've had a lot of calls lately about what to do for these cases, and not that we're treating or diagnosing. I want to make that very clear. But definitely look at vitamin D levels in these cases for blood pressure. We have a reference, and there's a lot of references on PubMed. So that's irrefutable evidence for those cases.
You know, the BioDK caps has really, in this entire suite of vitamin D products, has moved itself to the top tier. And it is probably the one that is the most clinically diverse for most practitioners. It's the one that most practitioners probably think about first.
Right.
But I want to, probably butt's not the right way to transition this. Just an addition here is that we've recognized that with feedback from practitioners that as patients have become sicker, as the need for vitamin D has become certainly more apparent, that there are times when you want to increase the amount of vitamin D that you're delivering with one serving. And with that, I'll introduce to you the newest vitamin D product, which is going to be BioDK Caps 10,000 IU. And the name really tells you everything that you probably need to know about this product, right? It's pretty black and white. But it's just surely a recognition that there are going to be times when more aggressive dosing is needed. And those may look like when you have metabolic dysfunction, the immunologically challenged patients that fall under that autoimmune category. Of course, with autoimmunity, vitamin D is going to be one of the key regulators for the different T helper subsets. But also when there's an acute immune challenge, you know, thinking in terms of cold and flu season, these acute responses where someone may want to get up to 50,000 IUs per day for a very short period of time and then titrate down. This is going to be a scenario where our product where practitioners can make that recommendation. So if you think in terms of short term with acute immune challenges or injuries, you know, even if you're looking to try to help someone in those early stages of rehab, Daniel mentioned pain modulation, the inflammatory cascades, dampening those, that would be where this would be beneficial in those early stages of rehabilitation. Then if you think about longer term use, but I would say that really comes under the guidance of clinicians for more chronic conditions where the vitamin D is just being used at a very fast rate to try to offset these states of dysfunction throughout the body. And patients just, you're going to wear them out at some point with giving so many pills. So this is a way to increase the compliance and reduce the pill count. Now, let me run through a couple of numbers with you on this. And I'm going to bring the vitamin K into the conversation now. And a lot of what I'm going to say about the vitamin K in this product is also applicable to the vitamin K in the other vitamin D products, specifically the BioDK caps, the 5,000 option. But since we're talking about the 10,000 here, it's 10,000 IUs, which is equivalent to 250 micrograms. You also get the vitamin K in here, and vitamin K is going to be supportive of things like osteocalcin, your matrix glade protein. These are ultimately going to, when the vitamin D increases the uptake of calcium, these are going to make sure that that calcium is getting directed to the hard tissues in the body and that it's not staying active in the circulation. It's moving it where it needs to be. The amount of K1 in here is going to be 500 micrograms. I'll provide some explanations, some rationale for the amounts and the forms that you see in the product here. So with the K1, K1 has a very short half-life, which is why you're going to see relatively a higher amount, but it's also going to convert to MK4. And we often think about K1 as being associated with hepatic activity, so liver activity. In addition, you're going to find that there's also K2 as MK7. Now, MK7 is going to be in here at 75 micrograms. The only difference between these numbers for this product and the BioDK caps is that the K2 as MK7 in the BioDK caps is 50 micrograms, where here it's going to be 75. Now, we use MK7 because it has a long half-life, it's more stable, and it's going to support the extra hepatic activity. And you'll notice in that I mentioned the MK4, but not as being part of what we supplement because MK4 has a very short half-life as well. And also because K1 can make that conversion over to it. Now, we also want to acknowledge that some may ask, well, why don't you double the amount of the vitamin K in the product when you double the amount of vitamin D? Well, that's not necessary to do because once you saturate the activity of, for example, osteocalcin or the matrix glade protein, once their activity is saturated with vitamin K, you can't push it beyond that. And so it just there's really not a strong rationale for why you would want to push more and more vitamin K as you increase the amount of vitamin D in there. So it's really about saturated mechanistic activity. But this is one, if you're familiar or have experience with using 10,000 IUs, this is one you want to know about and put in your arsenal as well.
You know, Dr. Hill, thanks again for, you know, getting into that deeper science of the K1, K2, because I don't know how many years it's been, but vitamin K has really become big in the industry. And a lot of questions around it, about what's the dose and just what you mentioned, a saturation point. So we're a culture of one is great, six is better. That's not always the case here. So big fan of the dosing that we've just brought into the market of the 10,000 IUs of vitamin D for the applications you're talking about. I know when you work with people and the doctors talk to me, the vitamin D levels in patients is so shockingly low, and for various reasons we've talked about.
You know, real quick, Daniel, it makes sense to just mention that since we're talking about vitamin K here from everything that we mentioned earlier with vitamin D as it related to the emulsion technology, all of that equally applies to vitamin K2. So that advantage that vitamin D holds of being a true emulsification, of having better bioavailability, that is the same story that we roll into vitamin K. And as we talk about vitamin A and vitamin E very shortly coming up, that same story is equally relevant across all of these fat-soluble nutrients.
I wanted to dive into the BioDK emulsion then. And, you know, we're talking about all these very kind of, quote, people might think as we're talking very similar products. But again, it's what's the application for your practice? What's your practice population look like? And that's why I think this is great to have options. Like you were talking about, the DK caps came into our market. I looked at the numbers yesterday. You know, it's really taken off in comparison to what we had of just the vitamin D, you know, the emulsified vitamin D, which we'll talk about. But again, it's the application and what kind of practice do you have? Do you have a pediatric population? Do you have an elderly population? Things of that nature. The DK emulsion, now we're talking about liquids and drops, is 5,000 IUs of vitamin D or 125 micrograms. Again, with K1, K2 in the 300 microgram dosages. Refresher or not, it's emulsified as well. That's kind of our niche. And I want people to understand that that is our niche. I really feel strongly about that, about how we, the delivery system of these fatty solubles. You're looking at getting, though, I always call it the bang for the buck. Maybe there's a better term for it, but you're looking at like 750 drops in a bottle. Very cost effective, very easy delivery system with just a drop or two or how many ever you want. You're looking at five drops for this dosing, though, for the 5,000 IUs on the label. But five drops are so tiny that, again, your patient population, wherever it varies from the pediatric on up, is an easy application. But let's shift it, if you don't mind, and Dr. Hill, hop in here at any point in time as usual, but kind of the launch in the microemulsification world for biotics research was our BioDemulsion and our BioDemulsion Forte. And this does not have any vitamin K in it. And so, depending again where you sit as a practitioner, do you want vitamin K? Do you not? The BioDemulsion in one drop is 400 IUs, where in the BioDemulsion Forte, it's one drop is 2,000 IUs. And these products have been with us for a long time. And I wanted to share with you a couple studies that have been done and looked at. There was a study done at Boston Children's Hospital using the 2,000 IU, actually, vitamin D. And in short here, one drop of the BioDemulsion Forte, 2,000 IUs, in deficient vitamin D deficient children, raised the level 202% in 6 weeks. So you show that, one, delivery in an infant, a drop, great uptake. as you've explained throughout this whole process of the science of how that emulsion works. And to get that big of a shift in a hospital study is really impressive. Years and years ago, I was involved with a rep of ours in Colorado, and we actually did a vitamin D study on Aurora, Colorado firefighters. And they tend to be, well, it was just a population that this rep up there was working with. And there was an MD up in Colorado that wanted to hop on board and look at this because it was, you know, really like, wait, these people are really deficient. And look at their chemical exposure and all these factors for inflammation and all these, like you talked about, immune issues. The finding reported that in 8 week supplementation of 4,000 IUs of vitamin D3 taken daily increased blood levels on average of 106%. But here's the interesting piece to this. In this smaller group study, the average baseline for these firefighters was 27 nanograms per milliliter. I personally don't find that to be what I would call a therapeutic level. And then we raised it to, in just those 8 weeks, to 54 nanograms per milliliter on average in this group. If you look at why are so many people vitamin D deficient, we've talked about this briefly. I'm sure many of our people are aware, but you know, we actually utilize around 4,000 IUs per day is what I found in the literature. The dietary intake is usually only 1,000 IUs. Inflammation, like we've talked about, and immune activation are utilizing it up. Some people say, well, why can't I get my patient's vitamin D level up? How big is their inflammation? How big is their immune issue? You know, you're utilizing it. So are you dosing at, like we brought in the 10,000 here, are we getting at the right level for a responsive level to get it back up? I'll call it a therapeutic dose. You know, 1,000 IUs of vitamin D may not be enough, but 10,000 might really have an impact for these patients. So we have to look at that. And then there's the genetics. We can't disregard the genetic variants looking at these deficiencies.
Daniel, if I can just interject real quick here, I always think about that as the vitamin D equation. I'm so glad you jumped into that because it's on one hand, you have what's the intake, but on the other hand, you have what's the use rate. Yeah. And if those two don't match each other and either side is low, you're going to end up in a deficit.
Thank you. And that's where, you know, practitioners have called and said, well, I'm not getting this vitamin D level up where I'd like it. Well, we've got to look at the background factors here. So I wanted to share that. And there was the Institute of Functional Medicine many years ago came out with an amazing chart for what we would call therapeutic levels in response to scientifically data on disease processes. And I don't know where you like it, Dr. Hill, and everybody has a little bit different viewpoint. But in the Institute of Functional Medicine's work, you know, below 30 nanograms was like, okay, we're not really getting anywhere here. And when they got into the 30 to 50, we're getting someplace with therapy. But in my opinion, if we're not in the 50 to 80 range in a blood test, which the blood test is what, 20 nanograms per 200, these are the numbers to look for. And I'm a big fan of looking at the objective information in these cases so we don't overdo it. Again, where a culture of one is great, six is better, is not always the case.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's so important to have these emulsions, Daniel. And one of the things as you were going through this that I was also thinking about from the practitioner perspective is when you actually talk about the process of administration in a kid, how easy this is to get into a kid, right? I mean, you can drop it directly into their mouth. You can, you know, put it on your fingertip and just rub it on the inside of the gum. You could mix it into a liquid that they're drinking. They're never going to know it's there. I mean, there's so many avenues to get this in when it's necessary.
So. Yeah. We've talked about the different products we have. I know you're going to finish up here with the BioADEK.
Yeah, so BioADEK emulsion, as the name is accurately stated, it is a liquid and it is a fat soluble blend. So it's not just covering D or D and K, it's actually vitamins A, D, E, and K. And it's not uncommon to see these nutrients overlap in various physiological systems. And as a practitioner, when you're dosing high amounts of one fat soluble vitamin, you do have to pay attention to the others. So the way that this product breaks down is it's 1,000 IUs of vitamin D, or if we're talking micrograms, that's going to be 25 micrograms. It does include vitamin K as both K1 and MK7, and those are in a 1-to-1 ratio, so it's 50 micrograms of each. And then we have vitamin A at 370 micrograms of RAE. So again, a little bit of a change in terminology on that as well, units, but that's about 1,250 IUs. And then lastly, we're going to have vitamin E as D-alpha tocopherol and mixed tocopherols at 20 milligrams. Now, your applications here are going to be kids, logically, just really simple way to get this in. But this is also a good option at the other end of the lifespan where we talk about older adults with multiple fat soluble deficiencies. This can be a good fit for them also. There's equally hormonal applications that are relevant here. So if you think in terms of thyroid function, thyroid's going to be dependent on a lot of these fat-soluble nutrients, but also just optimization of hormone receptor sites. And then probably lastly in this would be barrier support. And that could be not just the gut barrier, but also the brain or the lung as barrier systems as well. So.
You know, we've covered a lot of material and very, you know, similar products. But again, I just want people to remember, look for your patient population and your most, you know, active application of these products, because they're all have been effective in our line.
Yeah. Before we began today's conversation, as a practitioner, you already valued vitamin D and the growing body of evidence supporting its use across many clinical scenarios. However, after hearing Daniel and I speak today, we hope that you see that when choosing from the Biotics Research suite of vitamin D products, you're selecting what we would consider a physiological ally that overcomes common digestive limitations in the most efficient way possible. And with this understanding and the confidence that you can choose liquids or capsules, you can choose low dose, high dose options, single nutrient options, combination formulas, you as the practitioner are going to always be prepared regardless of what that patient presentation shows up as. So if you're looking for any of the information, the content that we've shared today on any of these products or resources mentioned in today's show, please reach out to your local representative or to the home office. And in closing, I want to thank Daniel for his willingness to share his time and experience to help all of us become more versed in the appropriate application of Biotics Research products. We all appreciate you being a part of today's podcast and hope you will join us again for another episode of the Wellness Unfiltered Pro podcast.